Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening to this podcast of Real Recovery. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Real Recovery.
Welcome to Real Recovery, Bill and George. We're so glad you joined us tonight. We have a great show planned for you, like we always try to do. George, tonight has a little bit of a special connection for you because our guest tonight is someone near and dear to your heart.
A very good friend. And this story you're going to want to hang around and listen to. God is all over this story, lining it up. We're going to start off with him, you know, getting some background, because otherwise you really don't totally appreciate what a true miracle it is.
I have a feeling tonight's story is going to have some twists and turns. You know, usually the stories are kind of predictable on Real Recovery, but I think tonight is going to be a little bit different. So you're not going to want to miss anything.
Yeah, it's a story you can only appreciate by looking in the rearview mirror. And I was there. I had a front row seat.
Nice.
Most of it. And it was great. But, you know, I was thinking we do a step.
Have you ever paid for a front row seat? You haven't, have you?
No. And by
if you have a front row seat, someone's taking you to a game.
You know,
right?
and you know what? It's Farley, and it's the box. And you know what I was just thinking? We didn't go this year.
No.
So maybe we should get somebody else. Go out in the park and get somebody else here.
Yeah.
Yeah. No resentment here.
Okay.
But I was thinking, we do a step every week on the show. And the reason we do a step, Billy, is to walk out our faith. We don't worship at the altar of AA. Our God, as we understand him, is Jesus Christ. And we have step 12, which is having had a spiritual awakening. As the result of these steps, we carry the message to other alcoholics and practice these principles in all our affairs. And really what that means is you can't give something away that you don't have. But this isn't about getting a medallion for not drinking. It's about developing a relationship with the living God that's only accessible through Jesus Christ. And we look back and go, well, I came in to stop drinking, and I got a relationship with God. He's sovereign. Nothing happens that he doesn't allow. That your next breath, my next breath, comes at the mercy of an all-sovereign God. And he allowed us to go our own way so we could deepen our walk with him. But what we're going to see tonight, Bill, is a bunch of guys in recovery. And what we mean by that, if you're a Christian who doesn't have an alcohol or drug problem, you are in recovery because your life should be different than when you got saved. And tonight's story is about a guy who isn't an alcoholic and addict, but all the guys in his Bible study are. And I'll just have that as a little clue of what's coming. And so for just the time was right, this guy was prepared. And we talk often on this show that God doesn't get us saved and sober without having a job to do. And the best thing you can do if you're a recovery person is share with somebody struggling with the issue or issues, in my case, that you have and have had, that God has shown you victory through. Because you know what they're going through. You know how they think. You know how they feel. You know the pain. But you also know the way out.
Mm-hmm. George, in recovery rooms, how would you define spiritual awakening?
A spiritual awakening, to me, is the Holy Spirit convicting you of your sin, but also providing hope at the same time. And what we look at is the word willingness. When you've got the gift of desperation, and that's beaten into a state of reasonableness, that I'm now willing to do whatever it takes to get out of this. You should have probably done it before. Why are you doing it now? The Holy Spirit. And I think the providence of God, whether you recognize that or not, if you give him credit or not, that's still how you change. And I think there's nothing more arrogant, and I know coming from me, this is quite a statement, nothing more arrogant than thinking that God only exists if I believe in him.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're listening tonight and you don't have a relationship with Jesus Christ, read the book of John. Start reading.
Amen. Man. Yeah.
You know, and what you're going to see is you didn't do this yourself. God did for us what we couldn't do for ourselves and didn't want to.
helping people find that they're lost is often a big, very big challenge. People don't think they're lost. Helping them find themselves as being lost makes them realize they need to be found. And that's where their relationship with Jesus often starts, when they realize, boy, I'm a sinner and I need salvation.
You know, you remember that old bumpers? Yeah, you're my age, you do. I found it. I found Jesus.
Yeah.
Okay, Jesus wasn't lost. You were.
Right.
Jesus found you. And I don't think there's any other way you get sober, guys, or change, because you're going to do what you want to do. And that desire to want to change comes from God. We need to have a heart change, because here's the deal. The reason why most people don't quit drinking, they don't want to. And they think, well, I'll go to treatment, and they'll convince me to change. No, they won't. So you're going to get out of treatment. You still really want to drink, but you have some tools you can use. But unless God changes your heart to where you're willing to go to any lengths to keep it, you're going to be back in rehab again.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't take any credit for my sobriety. If I did, I should have quit 10 years earlier. Why didn't I? I didn't want to. And I didn't want to this time, and something happened. We worship our way out of our addiction for His glory and our joy. And I don't know how that happens, but God sets the ball rolling. And the good news is, if you're listening tonight and you've been struggling, Bill, and you're really thinking about quitting and you turn into this program, God's drawing you in. Be Amen. Very encouraged by that.
Yeah, that is so true, George. And you have had 37 years of sobriety?
38, but who keeps track? That would be really immature.
You keep track, as you should.
Don't you think that'd be immature?
To God be the glory, George, right?
Oh, it's not me.
Oh, I know it's not you.
I didn't want to do it, and I didn't want to do this show because personality problems.
Feelings are mutual.
Yeah, well, hasn't God really blessed that?
Yeah. All right. We're off to a wonderful start, and we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to bring on our special guest, Tim. You're going to hear an amazing story tonight, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Real Recovery.
Welcome to the show. So glad you're with us tonight. You're listening to Real Recovery with Bill and George. George, we got a very great show planned tonight, and you know our guest better than I do, so I will give you the honors of introducing our guest.
Well, I've known Tim about 15 years, I think, and Tim is a graduate of Northwestern University.
You mean right here?
Right here, yeah, not wow. In Chicago.
Impressive.
Right here.
Impressive.
But he's a very interesting guy, and a business person who's a Christian guy who supports a lot of ministries and really a solid friend. And I'm really glad that you could do the show. So welcome to it, Tim.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Yeah.
First time experience. This will be
fun. Oh, this is very fun. I'm glad you're here.
Probably got to be a career highlight.
This is a big deal.
I mean, does it get better than this?
Big deal.
Get out your bucket list. Let's see what's on it. Is this on the bucket list?
Cross it off.
Cross it off, I always say.
This is a big deal.
Yeah.
So, Tim, can you tell our listeners where you were born and where you grew up?
Born and grew up. Okay. Born in the north of Ireland. I was a Navy brat. That's the answer to that riddle.
North
question.
Of Ireland.
Londonderry, Northern Ireland.
Wow.
The prettiest part of Ireland is the north coast.
And was it still a war zone back then?
It was the Troubles. Yep. So my dad was in the U.S. Navy, met my mom, who's from there, 10 brothers and sisters, typical Irish, right? My dad's from Ohio. I think he adopted my mom's family because it was a really good family, still is, fantastic. So grew up there. I grew up in Spain, Scotland, Ireland, so that sounds super, super cool and interesting, and it was. But I was a kid, right? So you can grow up anywhere and enjoy yourself. And then when my dad retired from the military, I think I was about 14, he moved us to Minneapolis, Minnesota, to Eden Prairie, Minnesota, and we hated it. He moved us here in like December, and it was, you know, minus 1 million or whatever it was, and it was a horrible nightmare. So my brother and I were 11 months apart, so Irish twins, and he also went to Northwestern. I don't know how we pulled that off, but we both got through there. And then we acted out. We were like, this is a horrible nightmare. We were well-behaved military kids, and for a minute we stopped that. But then it ended up being a phenomenal place to grow up, and Eden Prairie was great. It was growing. It was small at the time. and then was supposed to go to Gustavus for college. My brother went and then left because he was getting into some shenanigans. So he went to the military for 4 years. So then I was supposed to go to Gustavus. And at the last minute, about a week before we played some football, so I was going to go play football there, my dad said, "Do you want to go over and check out this Northwestern?" I'd never even heard of the place. And we came over, and I just, on a whim, I can't to this day tell you why I changed my mind. I just changed my mind and said, sure. I think the dorms are really cool. Mm. And so I went to Northwestern.
You got into Gustavus.
Yeah.
They call that the Harvard of the North. Did you know that, George?
That's Carleton.
Okay. So I messed
but,
up
I mean,
a little.
Gustavus is a pretty good school.
Yeah, yeah. And it sounds like his brother was a little bit of a hooligan.
A little bit of a hooligan.
Yeah.
Shenanigans
and hooligans.
Yeah, well, you don't hear that on this show. Can we back up a little bit? When did you come in contact with going to church? Was very young?
Yeah, we were young. I think my mom was raised in the church. I don't know that I would say that she was raised a Christian, but she was raised in the church, going to the church.
Now,
the right
Northern
thing.
Ireland, were you Catholic?
No. There's about three Protestants, and I'm one of them.
Okay.
Wow. I didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
No.
So a lot of Catholics, but was not raised in the Catholic Church, Presbyterian. So wherever we had duty station, we always seemed to stumble into the neighbor was a missionary family. So it was always around us. We just kind of oblivious to it. So that was good. And then my dad had to go into recovery. And that's where faith entered the Farley family. Mm. His career was going to be over.
When you say recovery, what kind of recovery?
Alcohol recovery, yeah. Okay. So he came from a rough, yucky background, and I think the Navy was his escape, and then got fortunate to meet my mom and have amazing kids, quite frankly.
Yeah.
We should cut that, yeah. But, you know, he had his demons, and so I remember as a kid living in an alcoholic house, and it was rough.
There's no drinking in the Navy, is there?
No, none of that. He was in Vietnam for a year, and I think he used to tell us, I was there for 365 days, and I was drunk for 365
days. Oh, boy.
Days. So it was kind of that time period. But so when he had to go to recovery, we flew to Jacksonville, Florida, went through rehabilitation, and met the Lord. And initially it was kind of tough because he, you know, it became that fire and brimstone sort of, you know, you're all going to have faith and you're going to have it now. And we were like, whoa, wait a minute, dude. You were kind of a...
Did you have to renounce?
Yeah, we were a little bit. Yeah, you kind of acted up for many years and we saw it. So so it was interesting how we all then came to faith and at our own pace, but he kind of forced it through the front door.
Well, he saw the importance of it and felt the urgency to
Correct.
Share it with his kids
You're
and have his kids
person.
Embrace it.
Yes.
Yeah, so God bless him for that,
yeah.
right? But it comes at your own time. And
comes at your own pace.
Yeah, with the Holy Spirit revealing truth to you and you being led to come to faith in Christ. So, yeah.
Totally. How old were you when your dad got sober?
We were, I think I was about 12.
Okay.
Oh, wow. Yeah. You were a youngster.
So were you an athlete growing up?
I was an athlete growing up.
What's your sport?
So I played football at Northwestern, played football at college, had a little stint at Baylor where I thought I was going to be super cool, and then I went to Texas. I had speed until I went to Texas, and then I saw what speed was all about. But So I played that, ran track, a little bit of other sports, but football was my game.
I want to go back to the recovery thing, George, if I may.
Sure.
Or does that interrupt your flow of thinking?
Well, it's more important than the football story I wanted to go to.
Yeah, we'll never find your flow of thinking again if I go the other direction. But when you talk about your dad's recovery, was it an outpatient? Was it an inpatient? Did he come back from recovery and say, okay, family, I'm going to start needing to attend support meetings four nights a week? Or what was that like? What was family life like when he was recovering?
Yeah, that's good. We went with him to Jacksonville. And I remember as a kid running with Marines in 100-degree like that was a cool thing, I guess, at the time. But they were all in recovery, and when they'd go out to do their physical fitness, we'd go with them. So we were with him, and then from there, his duty station became Maine, and so he was finishing up his 20 years. He did work the meetings right away, and then kind of faded on that, and church remained. So looking back, knowing what I know today, you know, he should have done a better job of kind of working that. From a friendship standpoint, group standpoint, all that. I can see that now, but I couldn't see that at the time. But So initially he did, And then it was church was it.
Yeah.
He still had the personality.
Was there any relapses?
A lot of other places.
Was
no
he
relapses.
A happy, joyous, free guy, or was he kind of a dry drunk, do you think?
He was kind of a dry drunk thing, but I think faith was huge for
sure.
him. And it was that big, warm embrace that he never got as a kid or growing up. I mean, it truly was a yucky upbringing.
Yeah.
But so he took, you know, and he was a driver. He was an A personality, so he was all in on everything.
Yeah, just the opposite of you.
Right.
So type
does that
A,
answer that?
Yeah, I think it does.
Yeah.
What I was interested in also was the way he worked his program, and it sounded like faith was a huge component in not only growing his faith, but feeling strength and hope in the Lord. So that's a wonderful thing as well.
I'd say that's 100% the
case. Yeah, so that's awesome.
I know the story. You're a senior in high school coming into your last year of high school.
Oh,
can you fill our listeners in on that?
Well, you know, God kind of steps in at crazy times and kind of taps us on the shoulder and says, oh, no, I'm here. And I think most of the time we think he isn't. So was playing football, was pretty good. At the time, or thought I was pretty good, and was on these little preseason lists, and so your ego's tied up on it, and hurt my Achilles out of nowhere, and I'm like, I can't do what I want to do. So I'm a captain of the team, I'm a leader on the team, and I'm struggling because I'm not seeing the field, and it's the thing you're in love with and pouring your life into it, and I remember sitting with my parents and, you know, tears in my eyes, and they're like, let's just pray on this and let's just see where it goes. I mean, there's a reason for this. It happened for a reason. So we're praying, and my mom, God bless her, prayed for healing. I didn't pray for healing. I'm just like, get me on the field. But she prayed for healing. The next morning I woke up and I didn't feel anything, and I'm like, no, that can't be the case. I must just be, you know, I'm Irish. We're famous for kind of making stuff up. So I thought maybe I was talking myself into it. But I was good. And the coaches, of course, were like, you can't be, you know, because the doctor had, I'd gone into a surgeon and they looked at it and they said, no, you're hurting. I was healed. Right.
Wow.
And I'm like, guys, so it kind of took me to a place, and this is maybe where you're going, George. I was like, well, what do I do for that? So I did fight my way back on the field, had a pretty good season. But I started as a captain. I said, hey, I don't know if I'm supposed to do this or not. I don't know if this is okay or not, but can we pray before games? And the guys would come in, and I'm like, you don't have to. That's not your thing. That's fine. It's just like you were young, and you felt like you owed something for this cool thing that had happened. So that was a first step in my health. And maybe that's part of the reason I went to Northwestern, just unbeknownst to me. But it was amazing. I mean, so there's you know, probably number 10 thing God did in our life.
Well,
that's a cool story.
It's a very cool story. Tim, did you know that George won first place in the punt, pass, and kick competition when he was nine? He was nine. It's our contract because I have to talk about it twice a year.
You have to talk about it twice a year.
Yeah.
And there was how many competitors in
there? I don't know. How many were there, George?
Three? Four?
200. But I'll send you the picture.
I've seen the picture of the trophy. He still has
my
it,
neck.
Which
yeah,
is really
I wear
sad.
It,
that's fantastic.
It's very sad that he still has it.
See, I've known him for more than 15 years. I never
is
been told
it more
that
than
story.
That?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm surprised I didn't squeak out. I hear about it every week.
Well, I wear it a lot, you know, the metal around my neck.
Yeah.
And,
it was wonderful. You peaked at such a young, ripe,
peaked a little
tender
early,
age.
But it gave me a platform like for the show.
Of course. Of course.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's good. What a loser.
Yeah. You said it, not me.
No, but I'm okay. God created me to be a loser. And
I get it. I think you're a winner. Okay, Tim, let's get back to you because I think this is way more interesting.
But that's a great story. So here's a guy that's down, you know, everything's geared up.
Yeah.
I'm a football guy. That's my identity. I'm going to do this. I'm hurt. Praying with mom and dad. Mom goes, let's pray for healing.
Yeah.
Next day you wake up. It can't be. Coaches don't think it can be. You go out and you have a season, but you're grateful to God. You realize something happened here. He touched his heart. Something that's concrete, you can really see and feel and live, and you're praying, and it's something started there with a really bad thing, like an injury. And on our show, it's Real Recovery. All the good starts with the bad.
Yeah.
And probably was the redirection to Northwestern, which was a good experience.
I love the boldness, Tim, that you said, any chance we can pray before games, and, you know, it's all voluntary, and you were taking that leadership role, and you were making yourself vulnerable taking a risk. You probably didn't sense it at that time. You were just being a kid that felt empowered to do something that God was leading you to do. So way to go.
Yeah.
God, help us destroy these Philistines, right?
Yeah.
So did you play football at Northwestern?
Played football at Northwestern for some pretty cool coaches and made some great lifelong friendships, one of which is the athletic director at the university now. And Northwestern was great for me. Now, I was still growing up, so, you know, there was some shenanigans that probably went on. I'm not going to tell them that because they may take my degree back. But my takeaway on that is not the shenanigans. It's that the peer group, these we're all exploring and trying to sort out our faith, are the ones that kept me going.
Mm-hmm. Let's
put it that way. It's people. It always comes down to people for me.
What was your degree in?
Well, we always got biblical studies, but I got marketing. It was a marketing degree. I was Irish. I figured that made sense.
Did it have
Blarney is another word for that.
Did being at this school have a big impact on your life? When you look back on it now.
No question.
Okay.
Without a doubt. You know, I think I was just in the community and just being part of it, even if it was just quietly listening and taking it in and letting it seep into your heart and your mind, your thoughts. I went on mission trips with the university. That was good for me because you go out into the world, which I grew up in and loved. So travel was great. And I've always liked people. And that was just, those were just great experiences. I think most of the people I went to school with were far better, you know, people than me. And so they kind of pulled me along. Let's put it that way. It's a great experience.
Yeah. Tim, I want to ask if you feel like you to this day are an adult child of an alcoholic. Do you see things in your life? I mean, when you're 12 years old or 11 years old or 10 years old and dad is drinking, it gets to be a pretty difficult environment to live.
Yeah.
And for a lot of people who are adult children of alcoholics, they don't talk, they don't trust, they don't feel.
Yeah.
That's the safe way to be.
Yeah. No, it's a powerful question. I think you learn how to navigate the room. You learn how to keep yourself in a safe spot. Mm-hmm. Learn how to navigate relationships, keep people close but distant. And you kind of you lose some tolerance for, you know, some of that silly behavior early on. Because you'd seen where it just kind of went on and on and on. And we did. We saw some stuff you don't want kids to see, right? So I'm sure it's probably still in me today.
Yeah.
I'd say that. My wife's a phenomenal hugger. She just wants to hug everyone all day long. She's a kind person. And here's me like a moron who sometimes doesn't want to receive the hug. Like, what is that all about? That's messed up. I'll get that figured out someday.
All right, now we're going to hear more of Tim's story. And for those of you who are wondering, when did Tim get involved in drugs and alcohol? Because that's usually how stories go on Real Recovery. Because right now, he comes from Northern Ireland, grows up, he's got a dad who is drinking, then a dad in recovery. And he self-described himself as a guy that was prone to some shenanigans. It makes it sound to me, George, like there might have been some drugs and alcohol and that, but we're going to find out exactly what happened when we come back from a break.
Good hook.
Thank you. So I don't think anyone's going anywhere right now, and they're holding their breath. Don't hold your breath.
Unless they don't like the music.
All right, you're listening to Real Recovery with Bill and George. Ryan's on the board, as always, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Real Recovery.
Welcome back to Real Recovery. So glad, once again, that you're joining us. We've got Tim as our special guest in studio. And George, right before we went to break, I tried my very best to create this big hook. You know, here we've got Tim as our guest. And it's a story of recovery from drugs and alcohol. But Tim's got a little bit of a twist to his story. And I think we're going to find out all about that in the next segment here. So, Tim, your experience, grew up in Northern Ireland, 10 kids in the family. You self-described a guy that liked shenanigans. I'm just thinking that you went down a bad path and got involved in drugs and alcohol. True or false?
False.
There. All right, George. Now you take over.
Really? Okay. No drinking at all?
Well, no, drank. Just didn't run into any walls on it. So was never a zero. I don't know if that's what you were asking.
Yeah, but my question was it a zero? Was there a zero consumption?
No.
So you did have some.
Yep.
But you didn't have what you would consider.
I think front of mind was always Dad's experience. So,
okay.
You know, maybe I will. But not.
Can we use the word moderation, which I never use on anything?
Yeah.
Okay.
So
you got kind of after college, you got on the corporate fast track, right?
Corporate fast track, yeah. It was good. Got into financial services business, been there a long time, got great people working with me and have outkicked my coverage. What I mean by that is I think I just got fortunate. I had, had people that gave me some breaks and things went well.
So. Did you stay plugged into church after you got out of college?
I did. Yeah. I was always, the church was good. And then had some pastors that were friends. And having a pastor that's a friend or a missionary that's a friend, that's like fantastic. Because then you're not in awe of them. You know them as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
Where they fall down and struggle and relationships and all that. So that was always a part of it. But stayed plugged into my church family.
So were there challenges? We're talking at a Christian radio station and it's great, but you were in a secular marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
And what were the struggles for you in that?
Well, in what I do for a living, I mean, you're dealing with families and you're dealing with sometimes, wealth, their finances. And I think one of the things I've learned is family plus money equals nuts, right? So it just you just get all kinds of behavioral things. You get challenges. You get generational stuff. I love that intimacy. I love that story. I love being in that kind of inner circle. But you see a lot of behavior that you're like, whoa, there's not a lot of humility in that. Or there's, families breaking apart or people not talking to each other over something as silly as, money or relationships like marriages breaking up over it. So you saw a lot of, money can be a wonderful thing for many reasons, but I think I understand the biblical version of it better today than ever, if that's answering your question, George.
Yeah, I mean, you see people, that becomes their God.
Big time. And I think it's easy to do. I don't think that they chose that. I think it becomes a comfort. And maybe you have lighter prayer, you have a lighter, your needs are less because you can meet them over here. And I think we have a God that's like, no, I want you to lean on me.
Yeah. Does the word entitlement come up in some of these meetings with families and money?
Whether we speak them or not, yes, they're sometimes in your mind, of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's tough behavior. You mean you feel for them because that's empty.
Right.
Well, you can be entitled when you don't have money, too.
That's true.
I'm thinking about us. But so the path went pretty well.
Yeah.
You're Christian and your life's going great.
Yeah.
Was that enough for you? Did you say, hey, this is good as it gets and I'm real happy?
You're always a little discontent, right, inside. Okay. If we're honest, we're always, not happy with everything, but yeah, I think
I work with George. Yeah,
right,
I get it.
Exactly.
You got all the luck
hanging out there.
Yeah, you got to look at the goal at the end, not the current. Right.
Life was good. I had a good job and kids, and it was going pretty well.
Okay, so were you going to Bible studies too?
Bible studies off and on. I would say with how this is going to play out today with what we're going to talk about, probably the best Bible studies probably in the last several years, more meaningful Bible studies, But, yeah, always in and out of Bible studies, but in the last few years, they were kind of big deal to be part of.
Okay,
George, you're teasing this up. Because Tim just said we're going to talk about something important, and we don't know what that is yet. I mean, you do.
So how did you get into the Bible study that you're in currently?
Well, so this amazing human being by the name of George Frazier said to me, hey, I kind of want to start this Bible study, and, there's these guys, and let's do it. So you were the catalyst of the idea. I'm joining this Bible study, which was a playoff of prior Bible study that you were in. And I'm like, cool, sounds great, let's do it. Just so happens they're all in recovery, except me. Right?
Sure,
there
Tim.
Comes the yes.
Yeah, everybody everybody in the band is out of step, but you
finally,
yeah.
I kept it together. No.
So how did you meet this guy? What was the, you know, how did we
You talking about yourself?
I was trying to go third person.
That was weird.
Yeah. No, I can't. Yeah, Herschel Walker.
It's weird when people talk in the third person.
How did you meet George?
You're never going to hear Bill Arnold talk that way.
Yeah.
No, you won't. That's not something Bill Arnold would do.
No, exactly.
This guy's a dear friend, right? So I, in our relationship, was a client, and then just through life, your life, bumps and bruises, mine, friendship took foothold and just got deeper and deeper. And then I think the Bible study thing was just an idea, like, hey, we need this, let's do it, right? So it's kind of one of those decisions, no big major decision. And as it played out shortly thereafter, you know, with my wife at home, alcohol showed up and started to get kind of out of control. And this was in short order. Like I'd been in the group with these guys and got to know them maybe half a year, maybe.
So you're in a Bible study with a bunch of men who are in recovery.
Makes no sense.
Within what amount of time you're starting to...
I think the men thing is a stretch, too. High school kids that are in
their 50s.
Well,
you're starting to realize there's a significant problem at home with your wife.
Massive, yeah. And it kind of flared up like a rocket. And I did all the things that a spouse or partner does in that. You try to get mad. You try to... You attempt controlling it. You try everything. We had two young kids at the time, and that was just blowing me away. And then I couldn't, as a master detective, I couldn't figure out when she was pulling it off. I'm like, I can't control it, which is a false perception of control. But I can't control it if I can't figure out where it's coming from. She'd go up to bed at 8, good night, everything's great, and then 3 in the morning would be stumbling around in the bedroom, and I was like, what in the world? And then you also take it personal, like, what am I doing to bring this about? You know, is it a marital issue? Is it a relationship issue? And it was loony. It was crazy.
I often wonder, to being on the other side of this, do you ever think that maybe it's your fault and you're not enough?
Or... Absolutely.
Okay.
And I think that's part of your frustration, is because then you're trying to sort out, you know, are the kids being, you know, is that too much for her? Is being married to me and my amazing personality too much for her?
Couldn't be that.
Couldn't.
Yeah. But, I mean, you would think that, would
yeah.
you?
Yeah. No, I went there a lot. I mean, and it started to take over a lot of my thinking all day long. I mean, it was there. She will tell you it was there always, but it just really presented itself in our house. And then you're thinking about your children, and you're also thinking about, you know what, I can't live this way. So it's a pretty rough little space that you enter.
Did you feel like you were going crazy a little bit?
I did.
Yeah.
I did. And she, you know, in that kind of back and forth, she was, you know, defensive, but hey, I'll just take time off and mind over matter. And, you know, that would work for a while and then it wouldn't.
Mm. So she was hiding stuff, right?
Hiding stuff.
Because that's the only way you can go to bed at 8 and wake up at 3 in the morning.
Yeah.
Bumbling, right?
Yep. And then you're left to question, is that alcohol? Is that you know, prescription?
Yeah.
Like, what's going on?
Not to mention, problems at 3 in the morning are always under a magnifying glass.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because 3 in the morning is crazy.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Right.
She went to bed at 8 and everything seemed okay.
And then I would tell her about it. I'd say, do you know what happened last night? You know, and I would kind of explain it. And she's like, oh, wow, that sounds horrible. And then finally one night, I took my phone and just videoed it because I needed her to see it. Now, I don't know if that was right, wrong, or indifferent, but I was, you're falling apart. And I showed it to her and she broke big time. Yeah. She could visually see it herself.
Yeah.
That was a hard moment. And happened to be in the study with George and the guys, another guy by the name of John Leonard who, you know, runs a center
Redemption House.
We
had him on their show.
Yeah, we have.
I mean, think about that. My wife's going through this and I'm in a weekly Bible study with a bunch of guys in recovery, but one, you know, person that's on the radio with it, another person who's running a center, and I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Again, God's present, and it starts in a bad spot. And I went to George and confided, and first I asked her, I'm like, hey, what are we doing here? And she's like, maybe ask your guys. So I asked George, because I love him like a brother and he's fantastic, and he said, talk to Johnny. And so I talked to John. He gave me someone's name, and it started there.
I look back on that, and you got to, you know, appreciate the Bible study you're in with. I always make sure I have my wallet and my cell phone when we're done, you know, because guys we're a crazy, fun band of guys who really love each other. And I remember when I heard this, having known Britt and you,
yeah,
it's not, I didn't have the arm's length that I have with clients. Not that you don't care about them, but it hurt.
Yeah.
And I think all of us were in that. And it's like, okay, what can we do? What do you need?
Yeah.
And it just, God showed up and it's like, we go there for a lesson. Well, the lesson God gave us wasn't the lesson that was in the book that day.
Mm-hmm.
It was that he is sovereign.
Yeah.
And when we left and John Leonard got, you know, involved and was going to get her into a treatment center, we're all leaving. And I know I wasn't different than anybody else. God orchestrated this years ago when you met all these guys. You know, we'd gone to hockey games and stuff.
Yeah.
And here it was for a time such as this, as they say. Yeah, we got to see that.
Yeah.
And it was lovely. I know it's sad when somebody's going to rehab and you're scared. I've done it three times, okay? But she went. Did you drive her over, pick her up? And
you know, well, so it was interesting, John. You know, looking back on the words at the time, he just kind of, I mean, it was nice to know each other because he cut to the quick and said, well, there's the easy way, outpatient, and then there's the way 99% of us do it, inpatient, long, dragged out. And believe it or not, she went outpatient, never went into, she went through the program. It was St. Paul and all. So she would go to this stuff, and which to me, inside, my voice was, this isn't going to work. You know, this is another head fake. And it stuck. And she embraced the steps. She embraced the big book. She was all in. I should back up for a second and say and give her some honor. She's the kindest person I'd ever met in my life.
And a hugger.
And a hugger, right? Yeah. Big hugger. I mean, she's innately kind. Now, I'm married to her, so that's a whole different deal, right? So now she knows me well. Maybe the kindness sometimes on a Tuesday or Wednesday is different. But she's a kind person. So she loves serving. She loves, yeah, we could say hug. So that part of the program, I think, sucked her in. But clearly God had a plan. And so she kind of went the easy route, if there's such a thing. I don't think there is such a thing. But per John's words, and has been every day. Is, I started to call her the lucky one. I think I said, I think you're the lucky one because you got to deal with it. You get to deal with, you know, all the things that are in behind the curtain. And she did so in an awesome way.
Mm.
So.
Sounds blessed as well.
Blessed, very
yeah,
blessed.
I love that.
Luck of the
so
Irish.
So as you were getting to the point of getting her into recovery and getting her to commit to going, what kind of things did you do? Did you call parents, her parents, siblings, friends? Were you starting to say, what do you understand this to be in her life? Was there an awareness by other people that loved her and cared about her? Or did you not involve yourself with any of people at all?
I didn't involve a ton of folks, and Britt did in the time that she wanted to do it. But of course, with family, you talk to them, and you know, my family had been through this, so that was sort of easy conversations. First, I think most people were a little shocked, which tends to be the case with these things. But her mom, wonderful lady, but would it's her daughter, so went to defense. Like, well, I think it's just the kids are tough to raise, and I'm like. A little more than that to this one.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think that's family, right? That's what we do kind of. And but everyone sort of embraced it as time went on.
And how did the kids deal with it?
You know, I don't know. Maybe the kids, when they listen to this, will know of it. They were young enough that every year when the anniversary comes around for it, and she's over 4 years now, she's tearful. And I was always like, well, it's a celebratory thing. She's like, yeah, but I think about what could have been if the good Lord didn't step into my life, and
wow.
I didn't recover. And she looks at those kids. She's a great mom. She looks at those kids and goes, if it was even 2 years later, they would have had more awareness. And so I don't know that they know a ton. They know because we talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
They know because we tell them. But I don't know what they remember.
One of the things that jumps out to me is that God intervened for her willingness.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no intervention here. There was no fuss. There's... And having gone through a lot of these personally and professionally, that doesn't happen very often. Oh, great. You think I drink too much? Well, golly,
right.
I don't want to have that. I'm ready to do whatever it takes.
Correct.
And she did. God hit her hard.
Big time.
And, you know, it was just lined up. Got a front row seat to this one. It's been very cool. But, Bill, you know, that doesn't happen very often.
No, it doesn't.
No. He's unique.
Yeah. All right. You're listening to Real Recovery with Bill and George. We're going to take a little break and come back and hear the rest of Tim's story. Be right back.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Real Recovery.
Welcome back to the show. Really glad to have Tim with us tonight in studio. George, great story, and we're going to hear some more about how Tim is walking out this amazing recovery with his wife and being a support and also a person that is very interested in spreading the good news of the gospel and supporting a lot of great faith-based ministries.
Well, I think about the time when she came in, and I think of that hymn, "On Christ the Solid Rock I Stand, All Other Ground is Sinking Sand." He'd been preparing for this for a long time. And you have to realize that in the group, we had a guy who lost a baby real early. We've had some tragedies, successes, and God went into action because you were walking the walk and you had the resources. God, people shows up. Bill, you have a great saying that I love.
Well, there's nothing inconsequential in God's economy. So here Tim joins this Bible study with a bunch of people in recovery, and unbeknownst to him, he's going to need to rely and lean on these men of God in a big way soon. That's not a coincidence. That's a God-ordained thing.
When he agreed to join the Bible study, he didn't know that.
Yeah.
Now, we've made him buy the books ever since for the study, but, you know, that's kind of payback. You know?
That's good.
Economy, too.
Yeah.
What other areas of your life? So your dad got into recovery before. Your relationship with your dad, is he still living?
He's not. He passed away. My dad was this powerhouse, and I love my dad very much, but he was, you know, just a rough dude till the finish, right? But I do remember this, and I think it's pertinent to, you know, all of us as human beings that grow up and a lot of times, recovery or, you know, alcohol abuse and drug abuse, may come from some of this as a guess on my part. But with my dad, when he passed, and my dad was a train wreck, he had everything wrong with him. So it wasn't like it was a sudden thing, but, I remember I'd call my dad, they lived in Pennsylvania, and I'd say, "Hey, happy birthday, Dad." My dad was convinced he would never see the age of, you know, 58. He's like, "Farley's just, we don't last, we die." And at 70, I'm still calling him, and he's, you know, grumble, grumble, expletive, expletive, and I would just crack up. Happy birthday, Dad. But anyways, you know, a rough guy. He grew up also with tremendous alcoholism in the family, and I don't know that he ever kind of had that question that you asked me earlier. What do you still carry with? And so my dad was one of these, you know, "I love you guys," like, you know, can't really say it, can't say I love you, can't. But I knew this, so I'll finish it this way. When my dad was in the hospital, we flew out, they had him on some machines, and I remember he was very explicit with me and my brother and said, "Your mom and sister won't be able to pull this off, in my opinion, so I have a DNR, do not resuscitate." You know, hospitals, they're in the business of resuscitating and trying to keep you around. So we looked at it. It was about a 2-second decision on my part. I'm like, "No, dad was crystal on this."
Mm-hmm.
So now my point on that is, you know, God gave us a minute as a family, as the four of us, to say, "Hey, this is going to happen. Do you have any unfinished business?" In fact, the little pastor came in. It's not last rites, of course, but he came in and said, he said those words, "Do you have any unfinished business with your dad? Because now it's go time." Like, it's about to
Wow, I'm
end.
Starting to choke up on that.
Yeah.
That's so powerful.
And I remember a lot of tears. I mean, that's a tough thing. But I remember two things, and I've shared this with people, specifically men, and it seems to have some impact. And that is, I knew without a shadow of a doubt that my dad was proud of me. And I knew he knew I loved him. George asked me a question a few weeks back. He's like, "What? You know, you have confidence. You walk around. I think that's the wind beneath my wings. Just knowing that your parent, your dad specifically, is proud of you. And I think with watching people walk through recovery, including my wife, who's awesome, I think there's part of that. One of the great verses in the Bible in Matthew is, well done, good and faithful servant. I think that's a pretty big deal. And I think a lot of us walk around without that. Mm-hmm. And I could see that in my wife. And so I think recovery gave her, well done, good and faithful servant. She loves the servant tent. She loves the sponsor relationship. I mean, it's built for her, or she's built for it. Let's put it that way. So it was peaceful for me. I won't speak for my brother and sister, but for me to have that confidence in that moment and to be set up almost on a stage like that, how can I not share it?
Yeah.
And I see a lot of people walking around with a lot of wounds, and, you know, I tell my kids that I'm proud of them, but I want it to be genuine and honest and to be for something, not just loose. And yeah. So
there's that beautiful episode when Jesus is baptized and he comes out of the waters of baptism and a voice from heaven comes down and a dove descends and the voice of God says, "This is my son whom I love, with whom I'm well pleased."
Yep.
And I think when men and women hear that from their father, their earthly father, I think they go out into the world in strength.
I agree.
Because if you don't hear that from your earthly dad, you can spend the better part of your life trying to win that approval from your parents. And it's exhausting.
Yeah.
So
we see that all the time.
All the time, George.
Yep. We see that all the time. I know this story here because I know you, and it's interesting to back it up even farther. We met on a business relationship, and you've become one of my best friends because of the Bible studies,
yep.
Because of the recovery. And I always tease you that you're in huge denial about your own drinking. But I remember I went to a Wild game with you last year, and I noticed you didn't finish your beer. And I got to tell you, I think that's a sin, you know. But that shows that there are people that can partake, and they know when to say when.
Yeah.
And it's been really good having you in the life. You're doing things with College Golf Fellowship, Young yeah. Life.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're called to give, right? So those are, I mean, the College Golf, I mean, that's selfish. That just gets me on a golf course. That's wonderful. But
I think it's
so
great.
So that's kind of
ministry.
A, you know, that's
yeah.
like a C deal. But, you know, youth. I think I do have a heart for youth, my kids, but also anybody's kids.
Yeah. And think of 12-year-old you.
Yeah.
Don't you have compassion for that kid?
Big time.
Don't you want to show up and be in the face of that kid and say, I want to help you and support you and love you and yeah. see you become this young man of faith, this young man of God.
And want to be proud of you and all of those jazz. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a big deal.
That's awesome. I am very, very happy. Your wife is now robustly in her fourth year of recovery.
Kicking
butt. Sobriety and making a difference in the lives of other women and making that part of her step 12 going forward to share the good news with others.
Well, you said something earlier, too, that the kids don't really remember mm-hmm. much of it, and they'll get to have a mom who never drank.
Yeah, that's true.
It's so cool.
And I'm glad we talked about step 12 in the beginning of the show.
Well, so am I, Bill. God knows what he's doing.
That's so true. That's so true. Well, I want to say thank you so much, Tim. That was awesome. And I was not completely aware of how much you and George knew and liked each other.
Well, the like thing. Come on.
But, yeah. That's my point. I
love him, but the like thing.
I'm a client. He has to. So
he's forced to,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. No, it's been very cool.
Yeah. It's fun.
Yeah. So we just want to say thank you for sharing the story, and God bless you and your wife's recovery, and thank you for sharing your story. That's all the time, Georgie, we got for Real Recovery tonight.
Good show. Say,
yeah, yeah. Thanks so much for listening. If you missed any of it, you can always check out the podcast, myfaithradio.com. Have a great night. God bless. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.